Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally, and this program is brought to you by True Nutrition. Dave, I love when a show comes together this easily with no technical difficulties.
How long have we been trying to get this to work?
Hey, listen, I appreciate your patience with me. I have, you guys should see, we are staying at Victoria's sister's apartment in Vancouver right now. I have brought the portable version of the entire studio with me, minus the lighting. I couldn't get lighting on the plane, so we're dealing with what we've got. But I think we actually have it working. There's a lot going on here, man. But nonetheless, what's going on with you? How you been?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Steady away. What have I done? What have I done? Let me think. Nothing, to be honest.
Nothing?
No. I'm going to do a talk at a prison tomorrow, and then I'm down to Taunton. It's my Body World in Taunton on, well, I'm going down Friday, but I'm doing a big seminar there on Saturday. Ooh. Saturday morning, 10 o'clock I think it starts, and that's pretty much it really. I mean, Taunton's like seven hour drive for me, so it's quite a trip.
What's the seminar about?
Everything. I generally, with seminars, tend to let the audience sort of direct it.
Ah, okay.
So it's we'll probably start with a little bit about my background, go into my sort of principles behind training and diet and that sort of thing. And then I like to get quite hands-on, so we'll get people up and get them doing exercises and play around with form and stuff like that.
Okay.
And obviously there's other people want to have a go at that particular exercise or try that particular thing, then we'll stay there until everybody's had a go, sort of thing. So I try to make them as interactive as possible.
Nice.
I think people get a bit bored when they're stood there just listening to somebody talking at them.
And
you know, it just depends out. But I very much let the audience. I'm just getting rid of a phone call. Just bear with me one second. But I try to let the audience direct where it goes.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, man. I've been there where you're sitting at a seminar, like something you really want to see. And then it's like you're sitting there for 2 hours and it's only the beginning of the day still. There's like 6 hours left and it's just going to be a matter of just sitting there and listening and listening. I would love to have that interactive part where you could actually get up and try an exercise and kind of learn in the process. That would be fun.
Well, I find it works better as well. You get better feedback from the audience when you start getting them involved, and a lot of people are quite nervous at they might not be the biggest in the gym, and so they're reliant on you giving them the information rather than them asking what they want.
Yeah.
Where once you get people up and moving and engaging with them, because you're then stood with them showing them how to do movement, they're much more likely to turn around and go, yeah, well, I wanted to ask you this. So it seems to make it a lot more productive. It was actually Ian Harrison that got me on. I did one with Ian Harrison a couple of years back, and we ended up doing it that way.
Okay.
And it's also more enjoyable for me as well, because to be honest, you just get sick of sitting there answering the same stupid shit questions over and over again.
Are you talking about the podcast, Dave?
No.
We do get a lot of repetitious questions, but we do get we get a lot of good stuff too. So I'm just messing around. But I do have a question for you related to that. You know, we get a lot of drug questions here. Over there in the UK, steroids are technically legal. So is that something that you can talk about openly?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about it openly. I can discuss whatever, because there's no offense we're talking about. Yeah, I'm not talking about a banned substance. They're not talking about anything illegal by admitting they're using it.
Yeah.
So there's nothing untoward there. I mean, I'm supposed to be going out to Holland in February for a big seminar.
Really?
Yeah, we're probably going to make that one a bit more sophisticated.
What do you mean?
Well, I've got a series of presentations I've done, like PowerPoint explaining shutdown and PCT and stuff like that.
Okay.
So what I'm probably going to do with that one is do about an hour of a structured visual presentation with film excerpts talking about me and then obviously the principles behind steroid use, what it does, shutdown, what PCT is, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And just trying to establish the basics, and then we'll get into the training stuff. But along what I generally do, see, when we start the training stuff, I just open the floor up then. So I'll be showing someone how to bench and at the same time answering questions about drugs.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So we just make it a lot more natural and flow at that point. And there's a laugh as well and a bit of piss taking and all the rest of it as well. And because generally speaking at these seminars, at least 50% of the audience will know each other.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Because you'll get a homegrown audience from the gym or venue you're doing it at, and then you'll get a wider audience of people that have come into that venue specifically to see you speak.
That makes sense.
So as a result, you can get a little bit of a banter going, a bit of a piss take going if you pick the right people, you know, and you soon learn in the audience who you want to go for because of how they interact in the early parts of the seminar.
Okay. Interesting.
But yeah, I think people don't realize these seminars for someone delivering them can be incredibly boring if you're just doing the same shit over and over and over again, you know.
I bet.
What drugs do I take to get massive? What drugs do I get to get strong? And it's just like, oh, for fuck's sake. So I prefer to come from breaking it all down, starting with the basics and building the foundations. And then you find the questions that are then asked are much more intelligent. Because you've sort of answered a lot of shit already. And they start to realize how dumb those questions are. And actually start to think up questions that are a bit more intelligent and a bit more interesting.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so they can be good, but yeah, they can easily stretch anything from 2 to 4 hours.
That'd be fun, man.
Well, I'm there anyway, so you might as well give value for money, haven't you?
Yeah. So, I said, I'm over in Vancouver. It's early in the morning here. Victoria, I think everybody knows, but if they don't, if they're just, say, tuning into the YouTube, they watch the other shows, that Victoria is my significant other. She's over working on her PowerPoint. She has part of her her PhD that she's coming here to she has to complete. She goes to University of British Columbia. And this is part of the process where now she has to basically give a presentation to her her group of people that she's working with, along with the public. So she's going to present this, and then they're going to go around and ask her questions about it, and basically try to. I think they're going to try to almost like trip her up, look for weak points in her argument and her idea, and then. After that, then they turn to the audience and they open it up to them. So that's going to be happening tomorrow. I think she's, you know what, she's one of those people though, Dave, and I feel like you're probably like this too, that she, as you could probably imagine, she over-prepares for things. So I think she's going to have this thing nailed.
I'm probably the opposite.
Really? You don't have every answer ahead of time?
When I overprepare, I usually end up making a mess. I don't work well with structure. I work much better winging it.
Okay.
The best presentations I've ever done are those that I've just turned up with no preparation, no PowerPoint, and just gone, bleh.
Yeah.
The worst ones are usually those with heavily structured PowerPoints, because I tend to talk in front of myself, and then I'm going, oh shit, yeah, we've done that slide.
You get like overcomplicated.
Yeah, so I find it a lot better with very minimal slides and then just large amounts of conversation. But visually, obviously, slides are very impacting and they're very, very good memory triggers. So,
yeah,
anyone that does presenting will tell you that the visual image is far more important than the verbal image a lot of times.
Really, really.
Yeah, we remember in pictures more than we remember in words.
I guess I could see that. Yeah, I could see that. I wanted to tell you, we did have a couple of follow-up questions that came about, and I told everybody that I spoke to that I would just ask you There was one in particular. You know, once we talked about steroids not being what they say they, what the companies say they're supposed to be, the UGL Labs, I feel
yes? got something very, very important to tell you.
What's
on that?
That
subject. No, we'll do the question, but on that subject.
Okay. Well, now I really want to know what this is. But so the question, one particular question that came up, though, was, you know, the lab that you initially broke down, and this was several episodes ago, everything that was supposed to have Masteron in it did not. But these were all blended compounds. They were like very high dose compounds that were supposed to be like test, trend, Masteron, fast acting trend, slow acting trend blends. It was things like that, and they all did not have Masteron in them. They just had various forms of trend. And the guy's question was, is it just in these high dose blended compound that you see, or is it just across the board? I thought it was across the board, but I'd let you talk about that.
There is a little bit more in the blends because it's easier to hide the missing compound in the blend. If you had a blend with tren in it, then you're highly unlikely to recognize any of the other compounds in there by way of feel or side effects, because tren's such an overpowering drug.
Okay.
So, you know, if you put a small amount of test and tren in a vial and said it was test, tren, and mast, you're not in a million years going to be able to tell whether the mast is in there without testing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not going to happen. So blends are particularly susceptible to those sort of problems. But yes, all compounds are adulterated. Well, it's not to say all compounds can be adulterated.
Okay.
And I suppose, in a way, a lot depends on what's the driving factor behind the lab doing it in the first place.
Yeah.
If they're deliberately trying to deceive, then it's most likely that every one of their blends will be missing something. Mm. If it's a shortage of raw, then it can be across the whole range.
Okay.
And on that note, some very interesting things going on in China at the moment.
Really?
Yes. January the 1st, the new prohibited list is released, or should I say is enforced in China.
Okay.
Now, China is one of the biggest producers of CO2 in the world. And they are constantly getting berated for the fact that they have such a high CO2 output.
Okay.
As an ongoing thing from the Chinese government, they have been putting pressure on the pharmaceutical industry because China is the biggest producer of raw medicines in the world, that these factories get their CO2 output under control. Now, what you've got to realize with the raw producers of raw hormone powders is that these are legitimate factories for producing legitimate medicines that have extracurricular activity.
Makes sense.
So some of these factories legitimately produce SARMs. SARMs aren't regulated by the Chinese government, and peptides, they're not regulated by the Chinese government because they have no commercial market. So there's never been a reason for them to regulate them.
Okay.
As of January the 1st, these drugs are now going to be included in the regulatory list, which means you cannot make them without a license.
Oh, really? Huh.
Now, part of the drive behind this, I have no doubt that there'll be pressure from WADA as well about control banned substances and that sort of thing. But the biggest drive about this is the fact that these factories need to reduce their output of CO2 emissions. And one of the ways by doing that is to literally reduce their output. So if they can stop their illicit manufacture side, then the pollutant output of these factories is going to reduce because their overall manufacturing is going to reduce. So the first thing is the SARMs are going. So a couple of the legit SARM manufacturers that obviously have no license reason to make this drug have already notified their suppliers that they'll be no longer producing. They have suggested in some cases alternative suppliers, some of the smaller factories that are still willing to do it. But because there's going to be an increase in policing of the legislation behind what chemicals can be produced, the vast majority of factories are turning around and saying, we're not going to be producing illicit powders for a period of time. And they're saying anything between 2 and 6 months that China will be producing no raw powders whatsoever for the illicit drug market. Some are saying they're not going to produce ever again. Landmark Chemicals messaged me today, actually, and said that they, once they've shifted their December stock, they will no longer be producing any raw hormone powders for sale at all. So, labs, not all, but some labs are trying to stockpile. But obviously, bringing in large amounts increase the risks of exposure, increase the risk of detection, because they're going to be bringing more than they would normally bring in, substantially much more than they would normally bring in. And that increases the chances of detection. It also increases the potential of prosecution if they are detected, because the amounts they're going to be bringing in are going to be much higher than normal. Few people that I know that are competitive, that have competitive schedules next year, are starting to stockpile for the simple reason is they want to make sure they can still get the drugs. But the Chinese manufacturers, in the large part, seem quite happy and willing to give up production. Obviously, their commercial enterprises are far more valuable to them than their illicit markets are.
Okay, that makes sense.
But I have spoke to a couple of the smaller producers, and they don't seem to be concerned in the slightest.
Really?
So,
like, they're just going to keep doing it, is what you're saying? They're just...
Yeah, because their argument is, and this is why the period of time is so long, what will potentially happen is the law comes into action on the 1st of January, so the inspectors will first and initially go to the very large manufacturers who they know makes arms.
Right.
To make sure that they've stopped that production. And then it will filter down from that point onwards. And the smaller manufacturers are very much of the opinion that they're just too small to be bothered with.
Interesting. Okay.
Some of the larger manufacturers are stating at this point that they're never going to do illicit production again. Whether that will change or not, I don't know, because obviously there's huge demand for raw power. So whether the marketplace is strong enough that these illicit these manufacturers are going to go, you know what, the inspectorate's finished, it's fairly quiet, fuck it, we'll do it again.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or whether it's just going to be the smaller factories that think they're going to stay under the radar and they're going to continue with it, I don't know. But it's going to be interesting, and potentially hormone production in the UK could be quite severely affected. Why that has such a big knock-on effect is because the UK is the biggest exporter of illicit-made steroids in the world.
No kidding. So I did not realize that. So you mean like illicit-made being basically some variation of UGL?
Is sold outward from the UK into the world at quite a high level. So Australia... Australia has the UK, whereas the UK has China marked as a country of interest when it comes to the importation of raw hormone powder.
Right.
Australia and America have the UK marked for the same thing.
I'll be damned, I had no idea about that. It goes to show just how little I know about this.
So it could be quite far-reaching, depending on how starved the UK becomes of raw powder. There are European alternatives, and there are Asian alternatives, well, Indian alternatives and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they're more expensive, so potentially we're going to see price increases. We're going to see a scarcity of product. But I think more likely than anything, we're going to see quality of product go through the toilet.
Okay. Yeah, that would be one thing I'd be concerned with. And I have heard that that India is a pretty big producer of raw powders, but they're not nearly as cost effective as China, is what it sounds like you're telling me.
Yeah, to a large extent, definitely. To a large extent, definitely. So, I mean, Alpha Pharma was originally, I don't know if you're aware of Alpha Pharma. It was a UGL, but a very sophisticated one.
I am, actually.
Right, well, Alpha was originally an Indian setup run by a Dutch guy.
Okay.
His import into the UK was so great that he ended up sending over Raws and manufacturing in the UK as well.
Wow.
Because he was shifting so much stock into the UK. Now, he went to prison last week or the week before.
Okay.
But I believe, I'm going to stab this, I'm sure they valued the operation at about $60 million.
$60 million. That is crazy. But no, it doesn't surprise
pounds.
Me.
Pounds, not
oh,
dollars.
Pounds. That's proper, even bigger. That's even bigger.
Yes. Proper money. Not your plastic shit. Proper money. So, obviously, now I might have got that wrong, but for some reason that number's jumping out in my head. There was four people that were sent to prison. I believe that the lab is still running to some form or extent of another. How genuine that is and how genuine to the original format that is, I don't know.
Yeah.
But that was a huge investigation that took a very, very long time to come to fruition. So, you know, there's and this is the other thing. There does seem to be a turning tide in police interest.
Okay.
The number of labs being busted doesn't seem to have increased any. There's a few people running around going, oh, police are definitely busting more labs. I don't see it. I just think a lot of people don't realise how many labs get busted on a regular basis.
Okay.
But I'm seeing more interest from them.
Hmm.
So they are definitely looking at this with a little bit more interest. And a lot of that's down to potential financial reward through proceeds of crime orders and stuff like that.
Mm.
So it's a sort of double-edged sword. We've got a heightened awareness from the police. We've got a huge increase in importation of raws and holding of raw and product. So for the police, it's an ideal opportunity because they're going to get suppliers and manufacturers when they've got the largest amounts they're ever going to have.
That makes sense. I have a question for you, or maybe, I don't know if it's a question or an observation. So, you know, back to the SARMs, production is going to get pinched with these new regulations that are going into effect. Now, that's the legal sanctioned manufacturing. Now, that said, you know, you mentioned all like the UGL stuff that's coming out of the UK. You know, what percentage of that is actually using raw powders for SARMs or steroids that are created from a sanctioned company versus how many of those raw powders are coming from a source that's creating them, manufacturing them from standards that, you know, maybe the, you know, basically a UGL or, you know, off the books type setup to begin with, you know, I mean. Will it really stop it?
The my understanding is that the vast majority of raw powders produced and shipped illicitly to the UK are actually manufactured by legitimate companies.
Okay.
They're just literally done off the books.
That's kind of what I've understood too.
And simply because it's been so poorly regulated in the past that they've had no reason not to.
Okay.
When this all started out, when the UGLs first started to sort of grow, the original order amounts were minimum 500, half a kilo.
Wow.
Okay, so you were ordering kilos or half a kilos of raw. Yeah. As China became aware of the size of the marketplace, they started to offer it in 100 and 200 and 250 and even 50 gram quantities.
Okay. Yeah.
And in fact, Landmark actually started a Facebook page specializing in homebrew.
Wow, no kidding.
And so what they were doing, they were offering quantities in reflection to homebrew, and you got added to the page, and then you could learn literally how to make it, do homebrew.
Okay, wait, let's back up. What's Landmark?
Landmark is a made-up name for one of the raw suppliers out of China. They have a few names that they use, and one of the names that they use is Landmark Chemicals.
Okay.
So under that name, what they started was a homebrew discussion page where you could once you would talk to them about them providing you with the raws, you could then go there, and there were step-by-step instructions on how to cook, there were recipes, there was all this sort of stuff on a page. They even started a mini-series of segments on how to set up a UGL.
Are you kidding me?
No, so episode one was all about location. Where were you going to put your lab? What sort of building? What sort of facilities? All this sort of stuff.
That's insane. I've never heard of this before. I mean, I've known who Landmark was, and I wanted basically you to kind of tell the audience, who anybody who didn't know, but I had no idea about these films. I got to find these things, man.
I used to chat to him regularly. It's something like Homebrew Discussions or something like that as a Facebook page.
Wow. If I can find any video, I'll add it in to this. Or maybe not. I don't want to get us taken off of Facebook or taken off of YouTube.
Yeah, it's there was no, I don't think it was video, it was just a list and little you know, post about what to do.
Okay. I thought they had, that would be great if they had like instructional videos, like starting your own UGL. Chapter one, what type of building?
It was a bit like that. It was a 6-part series they were promoting on, on how to build your own UGL. So they got very active in the marketing. You know, of how they were doing it. And Landmark's, all right, it's just a front for they come under about 4 different names at least, if not more, there's the company behind it. But they were very aggressive in their marketing and very, very forward in how they promoted supply.
Yeah, yeah.
And for them to pull back the way they have and gone, we're not sure doing it anymore. Simple as that. We're going to get rid of the illicit stock we've got and then we're done. We're not doing it anymore. Okay. Has surprised me a little bit, because it's like they must really be worried about this enforcement, you know, this new enforcement that's coming in January.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com, and use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
Do you feel that that people might, or let's say the popularity of SARMs might begin to wane under this pressure? Because I feel like part of the allure is the availability, and if they were to be, say, taken away or prices were to double, then I feel like it wouldn't be. I mean, because they're already more expensive, really, than running a cycle, in my opinion, from what I've seen. But I mean, if it became even more expensive and harder to get, do you think that people would be less likely to be interested in them?
I think potentially. If the price of SARMs is artificially high in comparison to the price of steroids, then I think people would choose the latter just from a financial perspective.
Yeah.
Or just choose not at all. One thing I am curious about, one of the big differences between steroid use and a lot of other illicit drug use is associated crime. In that people don't commit crime in order to get their drugs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All right, so the main crime associated with steroid use is the supply of steroids, and if anyone technically does turn to crime for steroid supply, for steroid use, it is in the fact that they start to supply it in order to finance their own usage.
Okay, yeah.
And that's really as far as it goes. It'll be interesting to see if that changes in any way if prices do get hiked. If steroids themselves become incredibly expensive, which I don't really see happening just because of the size of the market.
Yeah.
I think the market's just too big for a price hike to happen in that way. But if steroids do start to go up in price significantly, this is going to be the first time for a lot of people that they've been faced with a situation where they cannot afford to buy their steroids. So for the first time, they're actually faced with a situation where they can't use the drugs anymore.
That could be interesting. So wait a second. Back up for a minute, because I thought that this was mainly affecting SARMs. Did I misunderstand you?
No, it's affecting all roars. That's okay. What I'm saying.
What's
happened in the past is Factory A has legitimately produced steroids, and they've legitimately produced SARMs, but they've sold steroid powders illicitly.
Right.
So they've manufactured steroid powders illicitly as well. Now they're going to get inspected because the government knows they make SARMs and knows they can no longer do it.
Right.
So because they get inspected over SARMs, they're having to stop the raw powder illicit manufacturer as well, because they can't have going on while an inspectorate's about. So it's not all raw powder production. So it's going to push steroid prices up.
Okay, I partially misunderstood you then. I understood they were going to stop the illicit sales of SARMs. They could no longer sell those because they didn't have a legitimate reason to. I didn't understand now I understand what you mean.
If you run a chop shop, yeah, as a garage, right, in the back of your garage,
right,
but the police are doing inspection of garage because someone's been selling dodgy batteries,
yeah,
you need to stop your chop shop, even though they're not looking for chop shops, because they're still going to be looking at your garage.
So I gotcha.
It's that sort of scenario. Most people have never been faced with a decision where they cannot get steroids.
In fact, a lot of people in the last several years don't realize how good they've had it price-wise, availability-wise. The market is really better than ever.
Buoyant.
In fact,
it's buoyant.
I would go as far to say that companies that were successful, say, 10 years ago, because they have been operating with high-quality standards overseas, companies that, that we oversee companies that had the availability before UGLs were around, those companies, I think, are even struggling now because there is so much availability. The companies that were very successful 10 years ago, there were fewer of them. But now I would go as far to say I believe they are struggling because there are so many competitors, so many domestic competitors in every country that are manufacturing it themselves. I can see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the UGL market started with China importing finished product. And then what happened was we realized, one, it was risky because you were having to import such a large quantity bulk-wise, size-wise.
Yeah.
That it was much more cost-effective and much more low risk to import a kilo of raw powder than it was to import 400 finished bottles.
Sure, sure.
So market shifted. China stopped producing end products, though it still does it to a degree, and started selling more raw powders, and the market's focused over the years and concentrated more and more and more and more on raw powder rather than finished product. But if raw powder gets rare,
yeah,
products can become rare, and price of products going to go up. So for many people, they will, in the first time of their life, actually have to face a decision on about whether they continue with their steroid use because it becomes either very difficult to get hold of or financially very difficult to continue. And for a lot of people, they will have never faced that decision.
Yeah.
And that might sound something and nothing, but I think people will be very surprised actually how difficult that's going to be for a lot of people, is the fact that they are now faced with the fact that they can no longer use steroids.
Yeah.
Or they have to find some way of financing it, which then we have this then other question is, are we for the first time ever really see other crimes associated with the use of steroids, because people are now trying to get money from other sources to pay for the steroid use. It's very interesting. And are we going to see a huge shift towards health services for TRT from people who are previously self-diagnosed and self-treated?
Yeah.
Because they can no longer get that supply. So this shortfall could massively change the dynamic of steroid use worldwide if it comes to fruition. And there is that big if. I genuinely don't know what's going to happen. All I'm is what I'm hearing is what I'm relaying.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I don't think anyone's really aware fully of how the raw supply market works in China, who's involved in it, to what degree they're involved in it, and how many of the main players are getting shifted out of it. But it could have minimal effects, or it could have very far-reaching effects to the point that the whole steroid supply chain changes completely for the rest of the time.
Well, I could see, and of course this is just speculation, I could see the guys that are here, say in the U.S., that decide, they get the bright idea in their head that they're going to start their own UGL, I could see those guys being the first people who lose their supply. You know, those are the guys that, you know, they were depending on a company like Landmark. Somebody emailed them and offered them, you know, a supply, and that's what their connection was. Companies who have been organized, who've been doing this, I mean, there's companies that have been doing this for, you know, decade plus overseas. I have to imagine that they still have, I mean, prices may change, you know, there's that. But I have to imagine that there's going to be, those people won't lose their connections as quickly. So I could definitely see, no matter what, the market will shift. And it might not be a bad thing, man, because, you know, we talk about all the time about how many bad UGLs there are on the market today. You know, I'll have people ask me questions and they'll say, oh, I'm using this brand. Are you familiar with this lab? It's like, no, I'm not, because everybody has 100 labs in their own neighborhood that they can choose from nowadays, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's definitely going to drum out the low-key amateurish labs. But if supply does get low, then at the same time, it's going to potentially increase the poor quality or underdosing that can go on.
Sure, from the same labs, possibly.
Yeah,
right?
May even from the main labs may have the same problem just because they can't get hold of raw.
Mm.
And there's another issue. If you have a lab that you run in your kitchen, your bedroom, your basement, your garage, whatever, and you work full time, and the lab's been, you know, the cream of crop for the last couple of years, if that lab goes, you're going to be pissed off. But it isn't going to actually fundamentally affect you, because your career pays for your house, pays for your living. The lab was giving you all the luxuries in life.
Sure.
For these people, where these labs are their business and their full-time, it's their whole livelihood going. And people always live to their means. So their lifestyles, their vehicles, their houses aren't going to be of somebody that earns a small amount of money. They're going to be of somebody that's been running a successful lab and earns a large amount of money.
Of course.
All of a sudden,
basically, drug dealer cars, you know, lifestyle.
But all of a sudden, they're going to need to find a legitimate income to support that lifestyle, which is going to be very difficult for them.
No, that's not going to happen. It's just not. Not if you're not a guy who had turned to selling drugs to buy a Mercedes. He's not going to turn around and legitimately find it, because he didn't start selling them to begin with for any other, you know what I mean? For any other reason, I mean, other than that's how he could make the money.
Give you an example, okay? I know one-man band UGLs that are turning over in excess, in profit, of £150,000 a year.
Okay, yeah.
And their lifestyles to match that. They don't work. That's how they earn their money, okay?
That's not like terribly huge, but that's like a very comfortable living. You know,
$175,000 to $200,000 a year is, I would say, a comfortable living.
Like, you're going to retire on that. You're going to have money, a lot of money put away, hopefully, you know.
Well, generally, these people don't, do they? Generally, it's lifestyle. Right. So there's no way they're replicating that from an unskilled or a medium skill base. That's not happening. So it's going to create all sorts of dilemmas as to, are they going to move into the other illicit drug markets? Will they go into cocaine? Will they go into weed? Will they go into other drugs? For the simple reason that's the easiest way to continue to make that sort of money.
Right.
Or are they going to walk away? I don't know. It poses so many questions and so many potential avenues, depending on how far-reaching this change in January is. But I'm starting to see more and more labs say, we ain't fucking do it. As in, raw manufacturers in China say, yeah, we ain't doing it anymore. We're stopping.
I just, you know what, Dave? I've seen droughts before. I've seen the climate change. I've seen major busts before.
I've never seen a drought on this scale.
If you cut the head off, two will grow back somewhere else. That's always been the way. If there's a demand, it's going to show up somewhere. Be it from another country, Pakistan, India, one of these other places will step up. Somebody will step up to the plate because somebody wants to make the money. You know, it's going to be something. But how long will it take for that to rebuild itself? That would be my question.
I agree. And also, to what extent are they going to manipulate the position with price?
Sure, sure. I'm not sure if you're familiar with what was called Operation Raw Deal. I think they had a couple of them, but Operation Raw Deal took place maybe 2007. It was targeted toward about 20 domestic labs in the U.S. that were all getting their raw powder from China. They took down all 20 of these 20-ish labs, 20 out of 30 of them that were all advertising on the same message board, I believe. And they changed a few rules. They stopped us in the U.S. from being able to have things tested. Before that, you could send a vial out and have it tested. Our labs here, I guess, the underground labs, were doing that so that they could do quality control and ensure that they were creating what they were trying to create. So the government thought they were helping us by taking that away. Unfortunately, they only put us in more jeopardy because people were then using UGL labs that had no testing, you know, done to them. But, you know, the big thing was is that they also cut out the raw powder supply. And that really hurt the entire market. I remember people telling me that prices went up dramatically. I'd have no personal experience, of course, but I've been told that bottles of Test Probe went from, you know, $20 to $120 within a short period, and that they were very, not only expensive, but hard to acquire, too. So that happened for a period, you know.
And that's a very low impact, because what you've actually done is you've not cut the head off the snake, you've cut the head off halfway down the journey.
They did something with the raw powder situation, too, and I can't remember what that was.
But they never stopped China from producing them.
No, they didn't.
But so what happened was a lot of production then shifted to the UK and then got shipped to the States.
You know what I think it was? I think they did step in. There was a crackdown when wasn't there some Olympics in China?
No, there was the Olympics in the UK, which cracked down the China output in 2012.
Okay, there was something before that. I'm thinking 2007.
Quite a while ago, yes, there was the Chinese Olympic Games, you're correct.
And they did some sort of shutdown at that time, too, because they were afraid of having PEDs available during the Olympics, something along those lines.
That was part of the conditions of the Olympic Committee, was that China made a more concerted effort to control the illicit manufacture of hormones and steroids within the country.
Okay.
But that was very much not on the level of this thing. This seems to be much, much bigger than that, to be honest.
I do remember then, though, the thought was that things were going to shift to India, and there was a lot of scare, and then it never did.
The difference in then was that what I was hearing back then from China was we're just going to have to keep his nose clean for a while.
Okay.
That was all it was. Just wait till the Olympic Games are over, then we can start back up. Because the government didn't seem to be particularly invested in it either. It was more just a case of, we'll do what we've got to do while the Olympic Games are on.
Yeah.
This is different. This is different vibes this time, because companies are legitimately turning around saying, we ain't doing this anymore. In fact, I know someone who has a as legit as it can be, Sarms and Peptides company. And he buys his raws from China, and they're certified. He has they're imported legally, and they're certified. He runs a research company. He sells research drugs out for research companies. And they're certified for purity coming in from China. And his manufacturer have turned around and said, we can't supply you anymore. You're going to have to go to a legitimate supplier. Try this company. And I've not seen it in this level in the same way. In the past, it's always been, look, we're going to have to shut up shop for a couple of weeks, a month, and then we'll be back at it. This time they're saying, look, we're shutting up shop for good. We're just not doing it anymore. And that, I think, is the big difference in the mood this time. Because previously, the enforcement's been around the chemicals themselves. What they're saying now is, your factory outputs X amount of tons of CO2 a year.
Okay.
We need it to come down. So it's like, well, we have to focus on our legitimate business then. We just can't afford to do the illicit manufacture because we can't afford to be producing any more CO2 than we currently are.
Yeah. Okay, that would make sense.
So that's where it's coming from. It's though SARMs has been added to the prohibited the prohibition list of drugs to be made.
Yeah.
Steroids have been on that list for fucking donkey's years and they've still made them.
Right, right.
It's never been an issue, but now what they're saying is you're pumping up that much fucking CO2. You've got to bring that down or we'll shut your fucking factory down. And one of the ways we're tackling this problem is we're adding these drugs to the list so you can't make these. But the enforcement is based around pollution. So it's much more easy for them to measure. They can measure the output of a factory's pollution far easier than they can track whether they're doing a little bit of overtime making some illicit raw powders. So it's going to be interesting times, shall we say. Let's see what happens.
I just wanted to see, and I don't see any information as to any kind of penalty that happened to these Chinese factories. I'm just doing I did a quick search on Operation Raw Deal, and this looks like it took place in 2007. It says in a four-day series of daylight raids that ended Sunday, Drug Enforcement Administration agents shut down 26 underground steroid labs and made more than 50 arrests. It ended up being more like 120 arrests. And they do say the DEA has also identified 37 Chinese factories that purportedly supplied the raw materials for the labs, a DEA spokesperson said. And the agency also sees $6.5 million and 532 pounds of raw steroid powder. Wow. But yeah, I don't see anything that's saying that the labs were penalized at that time.
No, there was political pressure. But there was no real concerted enforcement in China.
Okay.
We had the same with 2012 with the Olympic Games here. The Chinese factory was going, look, we're getting a bit of shit, so we're just going to calm it down for a month while the Olympics are on and then we'll be back up.
Yeah.
That was always the attitude. The attitude now is completely changed in that they're saying it ain't worth it for us to do it anymore, so we're stopping.
Okay, so the crackdown dubbed Raw Deal grew out of a 2005 operation targeting 8 Mexican labs that were responsible for 80% of Americans' underground steroid trade. Several large Chinese factories had been supplying the Mexican labs. When the Mexican labs were closed in what became known Operation Gear Grinder, these Chinese factories redirected their pipelines to the U.S. So from there, it sounds like you're telling me they've redirected it to the UK, and now they're going directly to China. That makes a lot of sense then, man. Because even in those efforts, that would shut things down in a dramatic way for a period of time. But, you know, yeah, I still do wonder whether what would happen if China was shut down. You know, would somebody else, is there another country that would pop up? But it definitely does sound like it's something that hasn't happened yet. So it would definitely affect the end user. That's for sure. People, like you said too, man. I mean, if you think about it, there's people in the fitness world who've only been training for a few years, and that they've created their entire identity and their Instagram lifestyle all based off of their physiques. And a lot of these physiques have been built with, you know, PEDs. So I could see it dramatically changing a lot of things. It's interesting, man. It's some good insight you've got there.
I mean, addiction within steroid use is real. People can say, oh, it's not true addiction, it's not this. Well, maybe it's not. But the bottom line is, you see it time and time again. I've got this problem. I'm taking these drugs and I have this problem. Okay, don't take those drugs. yeah, but what if I do this? What if I do that? What if I do that? Because they just don't want to face the fact that they need to stop taking drugs.
Yeah.
So they look at any excuse. You know, oh, I get bad anxiety with Trenton. Well, don't take fucking Trenton. Oh, yeah, but can't I take this drug or that drug to help calm my anxiety down?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you could, but you could also stop taking fucking Trenton. It's not necessary. No. And they'll come up with every denial and fucking excuse under the sun as to why they can still take Tren as long as they take this anti-anxiety medication or they smoke weed, which is probably the more popular one these days.
Sure. Or CBD, right?
Yeah. And it's like, well, that's fucking stupid, really, when you think about it logically.
Yeah.
You're going to continue taking a drug that's causing you a big problem, so all you're going to do is take another drug when you could just stop taking that drug because there are alternatives. Yeah. And I can see this same problem occurring now. If supply gets very expensive or gets very rare, what are people going to do? Is someone going to start going to even more desperate measures to finance what is now something that could be double, three, four, five? In the States, it went up to 5-6 times the price.
Yeah.
If we get that sort of price hike, are we going to see steroid users literally robbing the local shop because they need money to buy steroids? And people say, well, no, it's not like heroin. It's not like those sort of drugs. People aren't addicted to it. They fucking are. You might not think it happens, but seriously, I know they are. I know people with life-threatening health problems that have been caused by their steroid use, and they still can't stop using steroids at summa pharmacological doses.
Yeah.
Some quite well-known people.
Hey, the more well-known you are, I feel like the more you would have to lose by losing your physique if you were known for your physique.
Rich Piana, bless his cottons, is probably a lot more well-known now that he had quite a lot of demons. And his demons to the extent where he would use a sight enhancer, as in a fast-acting one, and do a very quick high-rep pump-up before he even did a YouTube video. Because he was so insecure about the way he looked and so insecure about people judging him on his physique.
I do that too, Dave, before we recorded.
I eat a pie these days, but I'm actually on a diet and I'm sticking to it and I hate the world and everybody in it. And my wife turned around and said, you can tell you're a diet and you're a right crumpy git.
Good man. But, get over yourself. Get in shape. That's what I have to say.
Yes. I started a bit of a fun YouTube channel with a friend of mine on whiskeys. You watch the video, you see the size of my gut in that video, you know why I need to diet. And I looked at that and I was like, you fat fuck. Boom, done, diet. Anyway, there are people that these drugs are a huge portion of their life and self-identity.
Yeah.
And a lot more people than people probably actually care to realize. And a lot of people probably won't even want to see it in themselves. It's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. But it's definitely going to have a huge impact on steroid use as we know it, if the worst case scenario is realized.
Yeah. Well, with that said, Dave, we have a bunch of questions here. But I say, why don't we hold on to those? We had a rough start here getting going. We'll need some material for our next show. So this would be a great time to stop the show. I know you had stuff to do too today. And we can save those for the following show. How does that sound to you?
I'm good with that, mate.
All right. This is some good stuff, though. I'll look forward to it. And you completely dropped this on me. I didn't even know you had that topic.
I completely forgot about it, and yet I've been working on it half the week. And
have
I
you really?
Forgot. I know, it's mad. I've written I've had to write a report on it, to be quite honest. I completely forgot about it because it was work and it sort of didn't translate across for some stupid reason. And I don't know why, because we do talk about my work, but...
all the time, yeah.
Yeah, for some reason it just didn't twig until we got into the conversation and a light bulb just went off in my head and I was like, oh, fuck, yeah, I forgot about that.
All right, and Wi-Fi managed to hold itself together, so I'm very grateful for that. And thanks for your patience with that, getting this thing started, Dave. I'm sure the listeners are grateful.
You're patient with me, mate, and I'm a pain in the ass. So it's the least I could do in return.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to get out of here for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. Head on over to crosslands.org.uk. It's time to make the progress that you've wanted to make, and Dave would be happy to help you with that. Of course, reach out to him on Facebook. You can follow us on Instagram. That stuff's all in the show notes. We would love to have you ask questions for the show. If you find the Advices Radio Facebook group, you can ask us questions there. We will put them on the program. Of course, this program is presented by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES. Dave Crossland, thanks as always, my friend.
My pleasure.
See you guys.